Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Volunteer Country on SI podcast. I'm your host, Jack Foster, and today I'm joined by Matt Ray, lead publisher of Volunteer Country on SI. And today we're just going to be recapping Tennessee's bowl loss to Purdue in Music City Bowl in Nissan Stadium in Nashville, an absolute thriller marred in controversy, which is what we're going to get into. But 48-45, the Boilermakers take home the win in Nashville. So, Matt, let's jump right into it. You know, let's not waste any time today. What was your instant thoughts, reactions, just takeaways upon that wild ending from Tennessee and Purdue?
Yeah, I mean, I think you start kind of the lead up into that last play, you know, in overtime. Tennessee's down, and then it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth there at the end of that game with touchdown strikes, Jabari Small ripping off long run. You know, Javon Hott going up, catching a touchdown pass. Tennessee scoring on fourth and goal from one of the 14-yard line. You know, Purdue not going away, making it a game. They're going for two at one point. So it was the lead up into overtime was special. One of the best finishes for this bowl season, in my opinion. We saw some really good bowl games today as we're recording this. Notre Dame and Oklahoma State still going. Kentucky and Iowa just had a thrilling finish. But the final play in overtime for Tennessee on offense really just marred a great game overall. Just forward progress is a call that is necessary in instances in football. It protects players from injury. It prevents late hits, et cetera, but in that instance, forward progress was not the right call. Jalen Wright's forward progress was not stopped. Right. That was a touchdown for Tennessee. It was, you know, obvious to see. It was if you've watched the replay, if you've followed anything on social media, you've seen the multiple angles, you've heard the whistle blow late. The thing I think that I guess for me stands out the most about it is there is a human aspect to officiating, and the referee blew the whistle late, and then it was, you know, deemed, oh, we stopped the forward progress, whatever. Replay has to serve a purpose all the way around in a game of football, not just in this instance with Tennessee. Replay has to matter. If you're going to have a replay, you need to get the call right. The whistle blew late. The ball was across the goal line. Jalen Wright's body was still moving forward. That is a touchdown, regardless of how you look at it. So for me, it's not just this in particular play. It's the fact that – and I think Tim Tebow touched on this after the Tennessee game. This was a really bad year for officials. You know, 2021 was a really bad year for officials. With that said, in the world that we live in, there's so many angles. There's so many other things. If you're going to use replay, you need to be able to get every play right. If it's going to extend the game, whatever, the game's already extended through 5,422 commercials. It's either about, you're going to have to start getting the plays right, in my opinion, in replay. It's not going to take – it's not going to help officials, in my opinion. Sure, there are instances where there are judgment calls, and I believe that officials are truly trying to make the right call. In a goal-to-go situation like that, on a fourth and goal, for me, that official has to understand the – you know, magnitude of that play, understand that Jalen Wright is not down, you know, understand that that forward progress in that instance should not be called. But, you know, overall, I just think replay has to get better. I think the NCAA, the leagues, they have to work around a way to make replay better and make sure that the calls are correct on the, you know, if you're going to get some calls correct, get them all correct.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, and granted, there's going to be other missed calls, but a blatant call that would have been, for instance, very obvious. And listen, there's what, eight officials out there, eight, nine officials, depending. It was obvious that Cedric Tillman
was held.
Got held.
Right. Absolutely.
Why is that not reviewable?
Yeah.
Those types of situations, that changes the outcome of that game. Tennessee might win that in regulation.
Right.
So those types of things overall have to get better in the game of football. You're just going to continue to see this controversy. I mean, these refs make a lot of money. They make a lot, you know. I'm sure they put a lot of time in. I'm sure they're not intentionally out there trying to miss calls. I mean, but
no, absolutely. You know, yeah. It's just human error.
It's human error. It's going to happen. They catch a lot of flack, whatever. Help them use replay effectively to get these calls right. At the end of the day, that's what you have to use. We live in a world of technology. So get the calls right with replay.
And I thought the time they took to look at it was mind-bogglingly short. They're like, they were there for what seemed to be under a minute. And then it was confirmed that he was short. And, usually the type of I don't really know would be stands. But, man, that's another thing. It's just
that whole aspect of that to me as well, the confirmed, versus stand. I mean – You could hear, you listen back to the TV broadcast, you could hear the whistle blew after Jalen Wright was in the end zone, but the whistle doesn't have any effect in replay. That aspect makes no sense to me. I get it, but there just has to be a better way to do it. I mean, the magnitude that is put on these games and in these situations just – You have to get those calls right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not that Tennessee would have outright won the game if Jalen Wright scores. Purdue still has a shot, and they probably play different type of offense, on their drive in overtime than they did because they knew they only needed a field goal. If they need a touchdown,
100%.
Obviously, some different stuff. So it wasn't an automatic win if they make the right call and Jalen Wright scores. It still could have been either way. I just want to make sure, that point gets across because some are like, oh, well, Tennessee would have won, but you don't.
No, there was still a long way to go in that game.
Exactly. And I want to ask you, Matt, 48-45, so much happened in this game. But do you think that call being as, so big as it was, is the sole story to take away from this game? Or do you think there's a lot of other things people should be talking about? And if so, what are they?
I think there's a lot of other things that people should be talking about. I think Josh Heupel has caught some flack over his clock management at the end of regulation. I think he addressed it, a little bit. But I think when he gets in tempo, we've seen that a couple of times this year from him. He gets in tempo when time's not really a factor in his mind. And not for nothing, they had a couple looks. And I don't like the vertical threat or the vertical attempts back to back, but I liked the initial vertical attempt, right? This game has been ticky-tacky on the outside. A lot of jump balls that have resulted in pass interference, really, beneficial to Purdue. You have Cedric Tillman. Purdue doesn't have a cornerback that's really covered him when Tennessee has targeted him. If you can get a ball down there to him, 50-50, worst-case scenario, he catches it, you have a timeout, and you kick a chip shot field goal, or he doesn't catch it, you get a PI, and you move well into field goal range, and, you have a little bit of a longer field goal, but you still have a manageable field goal. So right. I liked the first shot. I didn't particularly like the second shot, which I think the second shot was the one where Tillman was actually held.
Yes.
So, again, I think Tennessee saw it. Like, it was there. So why not, take that again? But I would have attacked the middle of the field right there and got inside of Chase McGrath's target range. That's just me, but I think Tennessee
Chase could have managed the 50. His kick was good from 50 for sure.
Yeah, his kick was good from 50. And, you know, I think that I think Tennessee, if they had that to redo over again, I think they would have, you know, probably have attacked the middle of the field at some point. You had Jalen Hyatt, Bayless, you know, both those guys that are quicker, you know, top receivers, and Purdue playing a lot of cover zero. They played a little two-man late in that one, but, you know, I think that – I mean, I would have honestly been okay with Tennessee popping a draw right there even.
Yeah, just to know you getting yards. You're right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just opposed to something to try to get some yards right there. But at the end of the day, you know, missed call there. To me, the missed call on the hold was just as bad as the missed call in overtime. But, you know, I think that the biggest thing is that this was a back-and-forth game against a really well-coached football team. And Tennessee came out on fire. They weathered a storm from Purdue. Purdue didn't quit. Purdue didn't lay down. And I think a lot of teams would have laid down, but Purdue did not. And Tennessee saw the breaks not go their way, and they fought back into that, took that game to overtime, and ultimately should have had a chance to win it in overtime. To me, that speaks volumes to where Josh Heupel took this program from week one back last January to December 30th. You know, that was, for me, yeah, granted, the end result wasn't what anybody wanted inside the Tennessee fan base, inside the Tennessee locker room, but it speaks volumes to where Josh Heupel built this program to go this year, in year one, in a year that people didn't expect anything from them. People didn't know if Josh Heupel could recruit. People didn't know if Josh Heupel's offense was too gimmicky for the SEC. Nobody knew. And they found a way to win ball games. They found a way to stay competitive in ball games. And I saw something on social media the other day that really made sense. Tennessee did not play a bad ball game all year long. The Florida score got away from them. That was a really good Florida team at the time.
Oh yeah,
that was a team that something snapped in the locker room and somewhere at the midpoint of the season, and they quit caring. But that team was a really good Florida team at the time. They had a chance to beat Alabama the week before. Really should have beat Alabama the week before. Tennessee had a chance to be in that game longer than they were. I honestly still think had Jimmy Callaway caught that crossing route on that mesh concept, that he could still be running today. I think he gets into the corner of the end zone. I think Tennessee's alive in that game in the third quarter, and who knows what happens from there. But, you know, that took a lot of air out of Tennessee there. Just honestly out-athleted, out-depth down the stretch by Georgia and Alabama. But in those games, longer than people expected, scored points, scored the most regular season points of any team that's played Georgia. You know, the second most points has been scored on them all year long. You know, had in the Alabama game going into the fourth quarter. So a lot of positive takeaways, you know, for Josh Heupel on Tennessee in year one. And I think that game, even though the result wasn't there, it was a reflection of where this team is now compared to where it has been. I think last year, had a Tennessee team been in that instance, if they would have blown a 21-3 lead, or a 21-7 lead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 21-7.
21-7 lead. It would have been, you know, they would have laid down.
Right.
I think you heard Theo Jackson talk about it in the postgame presser. This team was falling apart before Coach Heupel got here. I think that's very true. I think the culture in the locker room, the want to play for Josh Heupel is tremendous for these guys. The way he handles these guys, interacts with them, his staff handles them and interacts with them, there's a lot of buy-in. And I think, honestly, this Tennessee team is going to be even hungrier now after the way that 2021 ended for them.
Yeah, man. I mean, in that game, the Payne Durham touchdown, I thought was going to be the original dagger. I was like, wow, that blunder, that's game. That's what I'm thinking in my mind. But then they just keep coming back. And then the 70-yard bomb that silenced, you know, Tennessee silenced all the orange in Nissan, that's for sure. And then they come back from that. It was just an incredible effort for them to stay in that game late, and that fourth quarter was wild. But, Matt, I want to get a couple more kind of storyline thoughts from you. Let's talk about the injuries, the feigning injuries, whatever you know, it's every time Tennessee's offense in late would get that kind of rhythm going. And obviously Josh Heupel's offense is moving very fast, and Purdue has struggled with keeping up when they were succeeding, you know. So I just want to get your thoughts on those guys going down, you know, faking these injuries, and just thoughts on how that needs to be handled moving forward.
Well, you know, I think when you look at it, the first thing that comes up is there's definitely a liability issue. You can't doubt that somebody's faking an injury. You just can't do it. Does it seem like those injuries are fake? Absolutely, it does. They seem convenient? It seems convenient. There's, you know, drive killers. It seemed to stall Tennessee a couple of times. It's happened to Tennessee multiple times this year. Ole Miss and Purdue both a lot. For me, I think the rule change that you make, I think it protects against fake injuries, and I think it protects against further player injury if those are real. I think if a player is down on the field and requires assistance from the training staff, they are out for the remainder of the drive. Not able to come back in after a play, not able to come back in after a timeout, out for the remainder of the drive, regardless of if it's a cramp, if you pops your finger out of place and you go over and get it popped back in, whatever.
Right.
I think that the player in question sits out for the remainder of the drive. It protects them. One, it allows the training staff to further examine them. It allows them to, you know, assess their self and not just be playing on emotion. Oh, I've got to get back in the game, whatever. You know, if they actually are hurt, I've got to get back up. I've got to go one play. I'm going back in. I'm not going to let the training staff look at me, whatever. I think if you have the players sit out a drive, it protects against fake injuries to kill a drive. And it also protects the player in allowing the training staff to assess them and do whatever they need to get them ready to go back in the game the next drive. I think that's the fix to that rule. I do think that that rule is going to have – I do think that rule is going to be fixed. I don't know how it's going to work, but I do think there's going to be something fixed with that rule. So we'll see what happens. But
well, it's like Heupel said after the game, the refs come up to him when it was all happening, and they were saying, we hope that there's a rule that fixes this. You know, they even told Coach Heupel. So everybody wants this to get resolved, of course, and – it's kind of one of those things that it's just with Heupel's offense moving so fast and a team like Purdue that doesn't have SEC talent, that's kind of the only way you can slow them down. And it was just unfortunate. It really, really hurt Tennessee's momentum, I think, late.
I think so, too. Yeah, I absolutely think so.
Yeah. And
I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I mean, I think you're right. I think Coach Heupel touched on that for an obvious reason. I think people around college football realize it. But let me say this. We can gripe about it till the cows come home. We see it in every phase of this game. It doesn't matter if it's from a recruiting standpoint where guys used to, you know, work around blue shirts and red shirts and bringing different guys on in different scholarship situations. On field injuries like that, it's essentially another timeout. It kills a team's momentum. It kills their drive. It takes them out of their tempo. These coaches are paid millions of dollars to win. They're paid millions of dollars to run successful programs. They are held to a high standard in terms of that. They're going to take every competitive advantage that they can get, especially if it's within the rules. And right now, the rules do not protect against those fake injuries. So until there is a rule change, it's not going to change.
Yeah. Yep. And like I said, hopefully that can be fixed moving forward. But I also wanted to get your thoughts, Matt, on just Tennessee's secondary performance in this game. You know, you're down Alante Taylor coming in, obviously your top DB, because he's prepping for the Senior Bowl, for the draft. And then you lose Brandon Turnage pregame. Well, not to an injury or anything. It was undisclosed, but, you know, Brandon Turnage was out. And then you have to throw in Kamal Haddon alongside Warren Burrell. Just, you know, Brock Thompson went for over 200 yards receiving. Purdue had a day. Aiden O'Connell broke the Music City Bowl record with passing yards. So just what were your thoughts on how Tennessee secondary, you know, performed in Nashville?
Yeah, you know, obviously, like you said, Brandon Turnage out with an undisclosed injury. I think Kamal Haddon was going to get the start anyways from who we talked with and what we gathered leading into the game. But, you know, losing Turnage was a blow to depth, obviously. Deshaun Rucker comes in and
gets cooked.
Struggles. You know, gets – yeah, absolutely, gets cooked. And, you know, not for nothing, tough blow for a freshman. First play he's in the game, Purdue rolls away and the backside post is always open, and they say that for a reason, and they roll away, and Aiden O'Connell throws a dot on the backside post, and Deshaun Rucker, I mean, he closed ground, but he couldn't make the tackle. Purdue scores and, you know, answers the bell really quick right there. Have to think that drive might have looked differently if Haddon is out on the field. Haddon got hurt on the fourth down attempt, hurt his shoulder, trying to recover in coverage. The first drive for Purdue went for it on fourth down through the little corner route, and Haddon fell and hurt his shoulder, so he was out. Tennessee scored rather quickly, and he hadn't made it back in. But you know, I have to wonder if Purdue takes that shot. You know, credit Jeff Brohm for seeing, oh, this is a freshman out there who's probably played, you know, five meaningful reps this year. He's played in some game and got some in-game experience as far as true meaningful reps. Most of those have came on special teams for him this year. You know, not to knock Deshaun Rucker. He's a guy who seems like he's going to have a lot of high upside, but as a freshman to get thrown into that fire early on is pretty tough. You know, for me, safety play struggled for Tennessee. Both of Tennessee's safeties are definitely guys that are more downhill guys, Jalen McCullough and Trayvon Flowers. Both are guys that, you know, excel in run support around the line of scrimmage and covering bigger guys, but they struggled in pass coverage. But it was really Tennessee's whole secondary that struggled in pass coverage. I've been a big advocate for Warren Burrell for a long time. Warren's one of the peskiest defenders in coverage that I ever remember seeing coming out of high school, just a gnat in man coverage. But, you know, Purdue threw at him time and time again and continued to get pass interference calls after pass interference call after pass interference call.
Yep.
And it seemed like Brock Thompson couldn't walk in between plays, but he somehow found a way to run every time, you know, Purdue was able to get the ball in his hands. But, you know, just a physical matchup there on the edge, and it just didn't go Burrell's way. You know, he's a guy that's had a really good year for Tennessee for the most part. But, you know, a test for Tennessee without their leader, Alante Taylor. You know, Theo Jackson, he had some coverage laps. He had a few guys catch passes in his zone. He struggled some at times. So it was, you know, a really good effort by Purdue without their top two receivers to you know, exploit Tim Banks' secondary. I mean, Tennessee had some, you know, explosive plays on defense. They dropped Byron Young into coverage, which was really, you know, a great call. Banks designed a really good pressure where Jeremy Banks was up in a gap standing and jumped right into the passing lane. Should have had to pick about midfield. That would have, you know, made some things look different. So, I mean, Tennessee picked Aiden O'Connell off three times.
Yeah, yeah.
Purdue had their way throwing the football on them. And granted, they had a few chunk plays. They had some Tennessee chunk plays, you know, like they had some stat sheet stuffers, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, and the tight end, we're going to talk about forward progress, probably should talk about it there.
Yeah, but I think that's why they, you know, kind of Tennessee, I mean, players kind of stopped, because.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like, I mean, he just spun in a circle twice, and, you know, Aaron Beasley's wrapped around him. There's three guys there. He's pushing towards out of bounds, and then no whistle blows. And, you know, it's kind of just the nature of the game. I mean, right there in that situation, if you drive him out of bounds and let up the wrong way, you're going to add a 15-yard penalty, you know, if it doesn't look right to the official. So, again, that's part of the game. But, you know, that was a play that, you know, was another question mark for me.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think overall Tennessee secondary definitely struggled. They're adding some depth. They're, you know, getting a guy in Desmond Williams, who is, you know, really coveted coming out of the junior college ranks. You bring in Jordan Thomas and Christian Harrison. But, again, you don't want to rely on true freshmen to have to play in the secondary. I mean, again, not that Deshaun Rucker is not going to be a really good football player at Tennessee, but – you don't want to throw those guys into the fire if you don't have to. We'll see what happens in Tennessee secondary. They could still have some veteran leadership back there next year. I thought when DeNico Slaughter came in the game, he played pretty well, had a couple of nice plays. Late, Tennessee using an extra DB and got him in. The thing about Purdue was they were having some success getting downhill at Tennessee, so Tennessee couldn't add that extra DB, you know, to combat that passing attack. Purdue was just balanced enough to keep Tennessee honest in that aspect. So that opened things up. But, you know, overall, Tennessee secondary, it's the worst performance of the year for them, in my opinion.
Yep, and the worst timing to do it. But I want to get your thoughts on, let's just kind of wrap up here. You know, you look at Tennessee's record, they finished 7-6. To me, they're a much better team than 7-6. Like the way they played, the way they hung around, like we said, you know, what you said earlier, staying with Alabama, staying with Georgia for a while, leading after the first quarter. Just what is this? What is one thing you think that is positive about this bowl game that is telling for the future in Tennessee football, if that makes sense? Like one thing they did, one thing you saw that you think is big to know for Tennessee football moving forward into year two of Josh Heupel?
Well, I think the Cedric Tillman Hendon Hooker connection. You know, I think that's number one. I think that's the thing that stands out. It's pretty apparent that that's Hooker's safety blanket, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, that guy's there, man. Cedric Tillman is a dude right now. The game is coming very naturally to him. He's got a lot of growth that he can continue to make as he continues to improve his route running ability. I felt that the post and the red zone was one of the better routes that I've seen Cedric Tillman run in his time at Tennessee. As he continues to develop those in-breaking and out-breaking routes, get better at the top of his routes, it just seems like Hendon Hooker is more comfortable throwing the ball to Cedric Tillman than he is anybody else. And that's just my opinion. I think that's the one thing that stands out. But I think with that being said, you have to look at how that's going to open up the offense next year for Tennessee. I think you'll see Tennessee in some more 10 personnel stuff next year with some of these receivers coming in. I think it's going to be really hard to keep a guy like Squirrel White off the field just because of his speed and ability in the slot. Jalen Hunt, you know, finally came on strong right there in the Music City Bowl. He has battled his tail off this season. I think he's in the right mindset heading into the offseason to have a breakout third-year campaign. He'll just be a sophomore technically because of the COVID waiver, but I think that you're going to see him continue to get better. I think you're going to see Cedric Tillman get better. You bring a guy like Squirrel White. I think this Tennessee offense is going to be opened up because defenses are going to have to, you know, respect Cedric Tillman's long ball ability. And then as he gets better, he can work the middle of the field, work the short to intermediate routes to make himself a complete receiver. Then Tennessee is only going to get better. So, you know, I think for one, that stands out to me. I just think that I touched on it earlier. I'm not going to touch on it long, but just the want to be there from this team. They wanted to be there. They didn't quit. They were outspoken about kind of everything that went on. They're not closed up anymore. They're moving in the right direction. They're taking everything in stride, and they are bought into what this coaching staff is telling them. I think at this level of football, that goes a long ways. Again, look at Florida. Let's go back to Florida. Before they played Tennessee, they had every opportunity to beat Alabama, and they beat Tennessee. And then shortly after, it falls apart because something melted down inside of Dan Mullen's locker room. And for me right now, Josh Heupel has that locker room, and the Tennessee players want to be there. They want to play. And I think that is one of the biggest takeaways that you can get. You know, it's unfortunate that 2021 ended on a bad note like that, but I've been there before as an athlete. When you have that bad taste in your mouth all off season long, and you've had some success leading up to that, and something doesn't go your way, you're going to want it even more. For me, let's find out if Tennessee does want it even more. Are they going to get, they need to get in the weight room extra. They need to, you know, be doing everything extra, extra film, everything like that, holding guys accountable. And you've got the guys in the right place coming back through that. You've got Cedric Tillman coming back. You've got Hendon Hooker coming back. The offense should be fine in that aspect in terms of holding guys accountable. You got Jeremy Banks coming back on defense. We'll see what Trayvon Flowers does. But a lot of veteran leadership returning for a team that should be hungry and have a bad taste in their mouth for the offseason, I think that goes a long ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the future is definitely bright for this Tennessee football program. And year two of Heupel is probably going to be even more exciting. And I'm looking forward to covering it next year as well. And I know you are too, Matt. And everybody, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Volunteer Country on SI podcast, the first episode of 2022. How about that, Matt?
Yeah, that's exciting stuff, man. It's going to be a good year in 2022. Looking forward to it. Just doesn't seem like it should already be here, but here we are.
No, it doesn't, man. I've been on with you guys since last May. So that's on the eighth month I'm on right now. So that's exciting to hear. But everybody, thank you all for listening to the Volunteer Country on SI podcast week in, week out, and continuing to support. We appreciate it. Every single one of y'all support, and allows us to do what we love week in, week out. And that is to talk Tennessee sports. For Matt Ray, I'm Jack Foster, wishing you a happy new year, and we'll see you next time.